my sister went to every appointment with me because I was sort of blurred. I just couldn't really remember, you know, I couldn't remember all the detail or anything like that, what they were saying. And I remember we went out to the car.
Yeah.
And we can sort of joke about it now, but I sort of held like a baby press conference and I went into the boot. And my family were in the car, but you know, I can't go near that car park without thinking of the just life breaking, basically.
Yeah.
It's like, and it sort of is quite interesting, isn't it? Because it can be a, you can never before, I think, in terms of life, have I had memories that actually elicit a physical. Like an actual physical response when I think back to them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, actually sort of your heart moves or you feel like you want to cry or, do you know what I mean?
Kia ora and welcome to this special episode of The C Word, Kiwis Talk About Cancer. I'm your host, Helen King. As it's the school holidays, Belinda has taken some time out with her husband to jump into their caravan and go exploring, but she'll be back after a much-needed break. As we lead up to what is perhaps one of the stranger elections we've had, The C Word is covering the issues that impact the cancer community. Check out our Facebook page for more details or follow us on Spotify and you'll be notified when new election special episodes are up. Today's guest entered the world of politics at the tender age of 28. National MP Nikki Kaye bid farewell to her life as a Member of Parliament this election after over a decade in politics. She was the MP for Central Auckland for 12 years, a seat that had been held by Labor for a long time. Her decision to step away from politics shocked many, but her valid Victorian speech gave an insight to what led her to her decision. She said, "I have learnt when your world breaks and shatters, you can be your most powerful." Nikki was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2016. She was just 36 at the time. She was a very busy minister, juggling several portfolios, and she really wasn't showing any signs of slowing down in her career. She describes her cancer experience as gnarly, that her life started to fall apart. A few weeks ago, I sat down with Nikki to talk about what cancer has taught her and how she thinks she'll cope when she doesn't have the busy life of an MP. Welcome and thank you so much for joining us.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
So it must be a quite a strange time for you at the moment. You've had a 12-year political career, but you're in campaign mode, but not quite campaign mode.
Yeah, well, it's been an interesting sort of few months, obviously, to go from being deputy leader and now retiring.
Yeah.
So the way I describe it to people is, I mean, I'm still doing constituency work and then helping campaign, but it's a lot slower in terms of workload, and I'm just sort of peeling back the layers of life. That's sort of how I describe it.
How are you coping with that? Because I know you guys work hard.
Really good, actually. I feel, you know, a number of people have sort of said, oh, you know, how are you going to find it? It was a quick decision, all of these things. And I've said, look, I feel in a really great space. I mean, I sort of have said when I left the building, I sort of knew, and it was quite spiritual. So I've been really pleased. I feel really, really good about the decision.
Yeah. And I read something recently that you had said, and I think when you have had cancer or you've had something that has turned your life upside down, that you can relate to it, that actually decisions are quite easy.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think then, and I was sort of, I think I was sort of talking a little bit about COVID, because if you've had, many people have had cancer, you know, you've gone through significant trauma, fear, world sort of shattering. So, in a way, I find with a lot of people that I talk to, you know, it can't be, few decisions are as hard as that. So, I think I certainly felt that when I made the decision.
Yeah, and I think you're right in that sense where, I mean, I relate a lot to the way you describe it, because it came out of nowhere for me as well. It was a chance finding of a lump, no family history, had led a reasonably healthy lifestyle and things. And so when your world has just changed that much, and you've had to really narrow in on what's important, I think you can then make those decisions quicker. Is this good for me? No. Okay, well, I think I can let that go now.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I often say the flip side of trauma is often extraordinary beauty. And I think that I believe there's a lot of stuff I used to worry about before that it's really hard to worry about, because you sort of know the scale of the things that can go wrong when you're sort of facing death experience.
Yeah. A friend of mine said to me, because sometimes I'm like, why do I, you know, this is such a crazy experience. And she said, you've faced your mortality. And I thought, that's, I mean, you do. Because cancer is this huge thing. And I guess other people who have been through the experience will know that your whole life is sort of put out in front of you with the, you know, with the medical treatment and things, and there's no other experience like it when all of a sudden your life is brought down to percentages and things, and it's not an experience that goes away quickly.
That, yeah, I think that's right, because, I mean, I actually read a book recently which is called Radical Remission, and they... you know, they talk a little bit in that book about fear. And I think if you thought of all of the things in the world that you fear, your own life and your existence is pretty much going to be at the top. So to at a young age, like yourself, sort of steer the Grim Reaper down, or, you know, hopefully, is, you know, it can be... It's, world-shattering, but it can also be extraordinarily empowering in terms of other fears that come at you.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I've just started listening to the audiobook of Radical Hope, which is the book on...
Is that the book? Is that her after?
Yeah.
Is Kathleen Turner... Is that Kathleen?
Kelly Turner.
Kelly Turner, that's right,
yeah.
Oh, cool.
I didn't think it was... I don't know if I'd like it or not. And I was a bit suspicious of it, thinking, is this good? But there are parts of it that I love the idea of, letting go of some of that fear and just living in a way that is so much more caring and loving to yourself.
I think that, you know, I mean, this is what I found from her first book. You know, obviously they study people across the world, and they look at they come down with 75 factors, and then they narrowed it down to 9. And I think that what is interesting is that a number of them are mental factors. Yeah. They're not like all diet, which has really sort of surprised me. And I think, you know, the way I look at it is a lot of people think you're a bit crazy, it's a bit hippie, but, you know, ultimately if you... release suppressed emotions and you are generally happier, you spend more time thinking about what the things are that make you joyful, you know, all of these things, even if they turn out in 10 years time to be a load of you know codswallop, they're a positive way to live your life.
It's if we keep at the moment, this theme keeps coming up in our interviews of of embracing different things. And we spoke with this amazing woman last night who, she lost her husband very suddenly 3 years ago, and we were talking about grief and how you cope with it. And because I think, I don't know what it was like for you, but you sort of open yourself up for a lot of very unsolicited advice when you've had cancer. And she just had this very different way of approaching it. And it was almost like, that is not helpful for me. I don't need to hear that. It's like, oh yeah, you can say that to people.
I can slightly relate. I mean, I've been so privileged to have had my kind of journey, if you like, opened up to hundreds, thousands of New Zealanders who have messaged me in some shape or form. But funnily enough, that was all good. But it's the, I remember describing it to a family member at the time there is an amount for which you're trying to conserve all energy to focus on treatment and, you know, getting, trying to get better. And so I think that a number of people might relate to the fact that I remember saying at one point, I said, you know, Mum, I think it was Mum, I need you to manage my, all the people that care about me, because this is, it's wonderful, but it's actually, they're draining me because they want to talk and they want to, they're going through their own grief, but I don't have the bandwidth to manage all of them.
No.
So sort of it's, I think a few people go through that, which is this balance of sort of receiving love, but then not being able to give to all of the people that want to see you.
Yes, absolutely. I had that too, because I just couldn't move for about 4 months, and yeah, they're just thinking, I actually can't talk to you right now.
Yeah. But there are different people cope as well.
Yeah.
The way I describe it is, again, without going too personal, because I don't want to name any of my mates, some people cope really well, and they're like, they sort of come in, they help, they leave. Other people, actually, it's really hard for them for whatever reason, because it brings up other stuff in their life. And yeah,
absolutely. And I think in some ways your experience is a little bit different from most people, because you had to do it relatively publicly. I mean, people did sort of give you space, I hope.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you had to return to a very public role.
Yeah, I'll give you an example of how that was. I mean, as I say, I feel very, very privileged in terms of the way that, you know, John, a range of people treated me in the public.
Yeah.
But my grandmother at the time, she was alive. And because we you know, John took off my portfolios, but then we sort of didn't make a public announcement until the Monday. We had this whole conversation about how to tell my grandmother. So we basically pushed it out to the Monday so that I could tell family members before the public found out. And this sort of freaking out that we had was that she was going to watch the 6 o'clock news and find out by watching the 6 o'clock news, because her memory was going a bit as well. So, there, you know, there were added complications, but overall I feel very, very lucky to have had the experience of the public that were amazing.
Yeah, that's good to know, because I do think that you know, everyone deserves that sort of space to deal with what's going on without you know, everyone kind of knowing everything that happens. So I mean, what was that like for you, having to adjust back in? Because I've had a slight insight to what MPs, you know, your workload is, you know, it's something to be seen. And, you know, how did you sort of, I guess, hold both of those things, going back into an MP's?
Well, I mean, the sort of, again, if I sort of look back at that time, John resigned. So I came back, sort of got out of bed to literally go to the leadership vote. This is sort of in the December. I mean, I've been diagnosed in September. So I came back earlier, even though it was only for a very short period, until I came back in late January. So that was challenging. I remember a journalist like suddenly saw me in the corridor and was like, what the hell was going on? But then sort of coming back in, I mean, I think they were very careful. I mean, they gave me sort of limited portfolios as well at the beginning of the year. And then, so, I mean, I just really can't speak highly of the support I had to kind of phase back in. But I think that there were a few other bits that I found, you know, a little bit challenging, but my staff were amazing over that period, because even though we'd handed over portfolios to other ministers, they were basically helping fly my office while it was still sort of continuing, even though I didn't have the portfolios. So, you know, I feel like they grew at the same time that I grew, and it's sort of, I can never really ever repay the way that they stepped up. And so I kind of came back in a way to an even sort of better machine, because everyone had been to hell and back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that they've been a big part of it.
It's so important to have that around you. I had a really strange experience because I found the lump on a Sunday, and the next day I started a new job.
Oh my god!
And 2 weeks into this job, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and so you don't expect your new employee to be, thrown into it. And they were amazing. I couldn't have asked for better support for someone they didn't really know. And I just think you can't. Yeah, you can't put enough value on having people around you that just sort of, come in and hold you through that.
That's right. I mean, I think it's really for anyone who's listening who's an employer or, it so matters, the leadership of the organisation in terms of how they're going to operate, because you're sensitive to any sort of feeling of loss and grief, and if people were like, oh god, this is annoying, that is I've heard horror stories from people before, but leadership really matters in an organization. But that must be very, very hard for you to come into a new organization and be dealing with that.
It was very strange. It was a very it was a very odd time, because all of a sudden I disappeared for 2 weeks to have my mastectomy and then came back and then was bald, and it was just people, you can't, for me, I couldn't hide what was going on in
a lot of ways. Do you think you had long enough off or?
No, not at all. And I actually think when I tried to go back, I just knew that actually this wasn't working, and thought it was best that actually I find something else that sort of suited it. Because I feel like we don't allow people enough time and space to actually heal. We actually on the show have talked about this a lot, where and it was definitely my experience, where people kind of look at you and go, okay, well, you've finished your treatment now, your hair's growing back, you're looking kind of normal, that must be it, get on with life. When actually, I know for myself, it was that time afterwards that I probably needed more help and more support than I did. Yeah.
I certainly think the psychological, the different areas that people often are grieving. They might be grieving physical. They might be grieving physically. They might be grieving in terms of a relationship. They might be grieving around their career. They might be grieving around children.
Yeah.
So it's certainly, I think my experience as a psychological is a large, it can be a pretty large burden that doesn't go away.
It doesn't at all, no. And I'm 2 years out, and I still, I went into Mercy Hospital recently for a meeting, and I just sit outside of my car going, it's all right to go in. They treated you here. They helped you. Because it was just like, because I was lucky enough that I had health insurance, so I had a lot of my treatment on the Mercy Hospital grounds. But I just had to sit there and give myself this pep talk to go in there that, no, everything that happened in here was good.
It is interesting, isn't it, because there'll be places, but there, I remember when I was diagnosed, I say to people, I had to deliver, my sister went to every appointment with me because I was sort of blurred, I just couldn't really remember, I couldn't remember all the detail or anything like that, what they were saying, and I remember we went out to the car.
Yeah.
And we can sort of joke about it now, but I sort of held like a baby press conference and I went into the boot and my family were in the car. But, I can't go near that car park without thinking of the just life breaking, basically.
Yeah.
It's like... and you sort of, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because it can be you can never before, I think, in terms of life, have I had memories that actually elicit a physical, like an actual physical response when I think back to them.
Yeah.
Like, actually sort of your heart moves or your... Yeah. Feel like you want to cry, or you, do you know what I mean? It's sort of, can't think of other things in life that have been...
No, and I feel like this is something that a lot of people don't understand, is that actually it is a very traumatizing thing to go through, and that imprint on you is huge. I mean, I haven't had reconstruction, and so I have a daily reminder of it. There are some, yeah, there's some foods I can't even look at anymore. I can't stomach it. Just, it goes, it takes you right back to that moment. And do you know, it's strange, COVID has kind of done that too, because at first I kind of thought, oh, I've prepared for this. I know exactly what this is like. But it definitely has brought back some of those feelings of during that time, because it feels like there's something that we can't control.
Yeah. And that, yeah, it's interesting how people can't, people who've had cancer feel with the COVID thing, because I sort of, I remember saying to my mates, I've already been like, oh, well, in a way, I think I can deal with this, because I know the feelings of loss of control, fear, your whole change in terms of life, which for many people who are going through experiences in terms of losing their jobs or COVID, you sort of, yeah, but at the same time, if you've got, you know, you think of your health, and then you think, God, what happens with COVID, and what does that mean? And yeah,
and I think there's something about your experience that I've, you know, that I've been, now that I've been through it, that I think a lot of women who have been younger can relate to. And this isn't scientific at all, but I've met so many women who were high achievers, who were, you know, had a lot going on, and then, you know, you get cancer and it just throws everything into sort of disarray. And I read something you said the other day, or I listened to it, and I thought, that's exactly where I am at the moment, where all of a sudden you think, what do I actually want? What is healthiest for me? Which is quite a difficult thing when you're used to being someone who achieves.
So I think, I mean, I think this whole issue of your identity, and particularly people who have been high achieving, and that's one of the things I've found out with a number of people. The first thing they ask me is, what are you going to do?
Right? Yeah.
Because they, I think, well, if she's sort of done this career, her identity will be tied up with 80 to 100 hours a week, you know. But actually, it's sort of the opposite. I mean, I talk about being happy on Great Barrier, which is definitely my love and what I want to do.
Yeah.
I think there is a chance that I will contribute in some other shape or form, but at the moment I need a really good break. But I think that's one thing that I have been trying to unpack is, you know, what is my contribution to my family? Will it be to society? But making sure that I never let those expectations of others sort of put me on a life purpose that isn't what I want to do. And that can be hard as well if you've sort of been in the public eye. But in a way, I think cancer, that's the gift that cancer has given me, which is this, like others, this clock that ticks, that is ever present. And so that's, I see that as a, I mean, I'm an optimist and positive, but that's a positive influence on my on my life.
It's really weird for me at the moment, because I keep having this conversation with people, and I feel, I'm not into signs and things, but I do think there might be something here.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting at the traffic lights yesterday, and I know this sounds slightly morbid, but I thought, you know what? Because I had very aggressive cancer, and I thought, if I only have 10 years, you know, touch wood, but, do I want to look back at that moment and go, you kept doing the same thing that you knew didn't work and that was going and that was, yeah, living up to someone else's expectation of what you should be doing? Or will I look back and go, I'm so glad I made that decision and then and lived the way that was kindest to me?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, this whole, my mate, he's a geneticist, but I also did a genetics group. I mean, some people, you know, some people get cancer. It's a mutation. It's terrible. But what we do know is that I think that there are some environmental things that we can do that can potentially make a difference for some people.
Yes.
Potentially not for others. And that's the whole problem. We don't, you know, we don't know enough in a way. We know, we think we know so much about cancer, but
we don't
people's
know
individual.
Anything. Yeah.
But I certainly think the whole issue of stress, the whole issue of healthy eating, of sort of being in a positive environment is something that some, yeah, I mean, the, it's sort of the way that I look at it, which is I've had an incredible job for me to go back to try and be Minister of Education. It sort of has been quite incredible, but certainly I think, and this is what you may be experiencing, for some people that I've met, they've sat there and gone, this isn't a healthy environment for me. This is not physically, mentally the right space. And I think it's that whole thing where I'm kind of like, I don't know whether I have any control over this. It could be just the luck of the draw. But if I do, then I'm going to try and do some things that are very positive.
I'm exactly the same spot. It's very strange. As I had a moment when we went on holiday, my partner and the dog, we went on our Christmas break together and we're down in this tiny bit of in between Te Aroha and Pairoa, and it was this sort of, I called it Camp Stag, but it was on this farmer's property, and it was one of those camper vans that used to go on the back of a ute, and we could walk all over the farm. We had these amazing views. And you have that moment where you think, I want to feel like this all the time. I know we can't be on holiday all the time, but I just think of, how much of my life has been about, working to deadlines, working in that, you know, sort of pumping out
that
work.
Dream.
Yeah. And where you just go, this is really nice.
Yeah, and I think that capacity, and, you know, whether it's meditation, qigong, walking, or, you know, some people like cat videos. But whatever, I think that issue of what makes you happy and what makes your heart sing, and if you're in a machine where you can't actually have deep relaxation and have rewarding relationships, then that's got to have an impact.
Yeah. And I don't think people understand until you've kind of even had a little insight to it that politics is a pressure cooker. I mean, I've, seeing the media scrums and knowing what, your pressures are and that constant kind of, I guess the grind that you guys go through.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way I sort of describe it to people, it's just the most incredible sort of highs and lows in a way, because you just can write a letter or make a phone call and you can change someone's life. But the bit that I've noticed since I've obviously announced that I'm retiring is always my inbox would have a whole lot of people to help. There's always like a list of people. I still have people to help, but this sort of, I have felt an amount of relief, which is that's been the bit for me that because I care a lot, I would think about all those people that needed help and that were left on my list, if you like.
Yeah.
And so this, it's been an enormous privilege, but this capacity to then be able to actually care about myself and look after myself more because I'm not trying to look after every manly dog. It's been quite life-changing.
And that is a liberating thing. I do think women often have a greater sort of capacity to try and care for everyone else.
That's right.
Yeah, before going, actually, I need to be.
I think there's a lot of people, be it probably particularly women, who do pretty much no self-care.
No.
In terms of, so they are just, you know, helping their partner or helping their children or helping their parents. Because they're often, if you sort of look at the research, they're also often helping elderly parents.
Yep. Yeah.
And there's nothing left in the can. And so when you sort of talk to them, they've spent their whole time.
Mm.
They've sort of got out of a habit of doing anything for themselves.
Mm.
So.
Absolutely. And I always think, I know when Simon Bridges, you know, bailed out as such, and then there's that wonderful photo of him with the yak.
Yes.
And I thought, that's what everyone needs to be.
Yeah.
Like, that resonated with me, the yak picture, because he just thought, yeah, that's someone who's gone, you know what?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, it's, as I say, it's an enormous privilege, and, you know, some people, they can work out a way in political life where they can manage all of that. But I think you've also got to know how you operate, and I've always cared a lot. And so, yeah, it's been an amazing privilege.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just one final comment. You quoted as saying, cancer has given you a different lens on life, to go where your heart is, and stepping down absolutely felt like the right thing. And I just think, you know, I know you're stepping down and you love, I know a lot of MPs do what you do because you do want to help and you have a huge capacity to want to make a change. And I think being able to say that publicly and do it is actually an amazing gift to give to other people and say, actually, this is how we should all be functioning.
It's funny you say that because one lady did message me and I suddenly thought, oh, no, what have I done? She said, you've given me the courage to leave my job. And I thought, oh, God, I'm probably going to meet her family one day. And they're going to go, thanks very much. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I think being able to talk publicly about the fact that if you want to leave something, then, you know, life's too short. You've got to do it. But also being a bit more, I mean, I was being intuitive. I knew, I knew in my heart that was the right thing. And I think a lot of people in their gut, they know it's not quite right, but they just keep going. So
that's so true. And I recognise the listen to your intuition from A Radical Hope.
Yes.
And I think it's very true that a lot of us have spent years not listening to it when we should have. And it, I think you're absolutely right. That intuition is something that we all have and probably need to listen to a little bit more than we do.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's the combination, isn't it, of intuition, but also your body.
Mm.
So the number of people, I mean, for which there was a problem and people just ignored it because they've got, like, they're a bit of a hard ass and they don't go to the doctor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biggest thing I often say to people is you just got, don't muck around.
No.
You know, if you think of all, your body is the greatest asset that you've got.
Absolutely. Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
In your new chapter, I think it's, yeah, I actually think it's fantastic that
thank
you're going, yep, I've done what I can, and now it's my turn.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Please check out our other election specials that are available on Spotify. They cover the end-of-life choice bill, the cannabis legislation and control bill, and I talked to a group who are urging the government to change the way we fund drugs. We are almost at our Pledge Me goal. We have about a month to go. If you haven't already, please give what you can. There are some really awesome rewards, including tote bags, tees, and hoodies. We are running our campaign to raise money to keep making this show. We love it, and we love connecting with you, so please help us get there. We air every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM, and we're available anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Mi jarabe te levanta de la tumba, es un jaleo pa' que siempre estés adelante, un poquito de mela, sazón y rumba, es un pasito que te voy a enseñar, un menito que sé que te gustará, y cuando aprendas a bailarlo con sabor, te aseguro que este ritmo gozará.
It's a hit when the Neptune's and the doggy dog finna spit. You know he's in tune with the season. Come here, baby, tell me why you leaving. Tell me if it's weed that you need, if you wanna breathe. I got the best weed by the seas. Ain't nobody tripping, VIP they can't get in. If something go wrong, then you know we get the gripping.
Show what I see, you don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes, messing with the guys. Are you telling me this is a sign?
Don't think about it before it leaves.
Now you step in with a Jeep from Los Angeles, where the helicopters got cameras, just to get a glimpse of our chucks and our khakis and our bouncing car. You with your friend, right?
Yeah.
She ain't trying to bring over no men, right?
No.
She ain't gotta be in the distance. She can get high all in an instant.
I'm not sure what I see. You don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes, messing with the guys. Are you telling me this is a sign?
Don't think about it before it leaves. Nigga, you ain't no change. She likes my tone, my cologne, and the way I roll. You ain't no change. Mommy, mamacita, have you ever flown on G5 from London to Ibiza? You gotta have cake till you'll have Sundays with your key times. You'll see Venus and Serena in the Wimbledon arena. And I can
Uncle Charlie,
preach. Nigga, don't be young and foolish. Don't know what you're doing. Don't know what you lost until she's gone. She had a pretty face, drove you wild, but you ain't had that Snoop Doggy Dogg style.
I'm not sure what I see. You don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes, messing with the guys. Are you telling me this is a sign?
Nigga, you ain't no change. She likes my tone, my cologne, and the way I roll.
Hey.
You ain't no change.
Stability is leaving me. There is something I can do. I can get on the telephone and call you a baby. Honey, I know you'll be there to lead me. The love you give to me will free me. If you don't know the things you're dealing, ooh, I can tell you, darling, that it's sexual healing. Get up, get up, get up, get up. Let's make love tonight. Ooh. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Cause we do it right. Get up, wake up, wake up, get up. Let's make love tonight. Ooh. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Cause we do it right. We'll be right back.
you now.
You blow my mind.